Yo, what's up, guys? Welcome into Stacking Dubs. Your host, Chris Chin here. Hook it up with a like, subscribe, follow if you can. Appreciate you guys very much. Coming to you after game three of the preseason against the Lakers, and Steph out, Jimmy out, Moody out, who is getting an, I think he got an MRI on his calf. Sounds like he's going to miss the preseason and hopefully be back by regular season opening night, which Kerr says they're not too concerned about it, but you never know with a calf injury. I'm adding that last part there. And Horford was also out, just kind of resting up. So yeah, we got a little glimpse into what the Warriors' depth looks like behind our two stars. If we want to extrapolate and kind of just, you know, play bigger, longer picture here, we got a little glimpse into what the Warriors could potentially look like in a post-Steph, post-Jimmy era. So I'll just more or less take a look at, you know, the two biggest names, the young guys that we're all having under a microscope as Warriors fans, and that being Brandon Podziemski, Jonathan Kuminga, and we'll just look at this one random preseason game in October and make all sorts of crazy predictions about their future from it. But, you know, it kind of comes from Podziemski's comments, I think earlier, it was either yesterday or over the weekend, about, you know, he wants to be the torchbearer for someone to pass, you know, for Steph, for Draymond to pass the torch onto for this franchise. He's not saying, hey, I'm the next Steph Curry. He just wants to be thought of as, you know, a leader, a pillar, a cornerstone in this Warriors franchise. And, you know, it's just the ultimate confidence, and it's a goal for him to essentially grow into that type of role. So for all the eye rolls and shakes of the head that Podziemski thinks he's the next Steph Curry, the next franchise player, it's not as much that as just having the confidence for himself to become the best player, both on and off the court, for his teammates and for this franchise as possible. But with that, you know, he backed up pretty much some of that talk just in a one-game sample size again in the preseason. So I'll talk about Podziemski a little bit. Just looking quickly at this game, Warriors break their winning streak in the preseason, lose to a Luka and LeBron-less Lakers team. And I thought it'd be a good comparison of just where the depth and kind of the role players lies between these two teams. And essentially, I think what we can conclude, again, just briefly, is that Warriors, I think, have a little bit better overall depth, better role players, but the Lakers have the best player on the court outside of the superstars, and the only really true alpha scorer or alpha player, and that being Austin Reeves. Podziemski, you know, at one point we thought might be better than Reeves. I don't think it's quite there. He does a lot of things better than Reeves, but overall as a player and just the scoring ability, Austin Reeves just, you know, he's on his path to becoming a potential all-star in the future. So I thought that much was evident. Reeves was great in this one. But Podziemski was great too. And, you know, as we're evaluating Pods and JK, you know, I'm looking at them as, can they be that alpha? Can they potentially be like an offensive engine when there's no Steph and no Jimmy? And I mean that both as individuals, and then I mean that as a duo, right? I mean, you can, for how you want to look at like that offensive system and, you know, Steph and Jimmy, that combo of, hey, you know, you obviously know what the offense is like with Steph, you know what Jimmy, what spots he likes to get to, and what it looks like playing out of the post for the Warriors. You know, can Podziemski and Kuminga give you like a poor man's version of that, where Podziemski is, you know, running off screens, he's being a movement shooter, he's also on ball creating for others and just kind of doing his, again, poor man's Steph role, and then you get Kuminga just catching it, you know, pretty much along the baseline and down low in the post and just playmaking from there, being more of a facilitator, but then also being able to score in isolation. You know, is that a potential lineup? Is that a combination for the now when at some point Steph and Jimmy are going to be off the floor? Is a potential lineup for the future that you can build on? I would say inconclusive to both. Both have a lot of work to do. But clearly from this game, Podziemski was the star on the Warriors side of the ball, and he played great. He played about as well as Steve Kerr says he's been playing all training camp. And then Kuminga had his ups and downs, you know, things to like, things that not so much like, and there's just kind of a general Kuminga experience. But I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into it, starting with Podziemski. So BP, yeah, 26 minutes, 23 points. And that's the biggest evolution of Pods. It just, can he be close to a 20-point score on a consistent basis, particularly when one of our other stars is not playing that night. You know, can he be a third scorer on a regular basis? What can he give you as an engine? Gives you his five rebounds, which is pretty commonplace as usual, and then gave you eight assists. And the assists were good. They weren't just kind of cheap, you know, swinging the ball assists, but they were playmaking, getting into the paint, finding shooters, finding cutters, a little two-man game with TJD a couple of times. So they were good assists, and he showed potential to be someone that could be an engine, someone that you could potentially, I won't go as far as pass the franchise onto, but at this point, yeah, he is the next guard and playmaker, as far as what we have on the current roster in a post Steph era. I'm not getting ahead of myself. I'm not saying that he is the next Steph. He was 10 of 16 from the floor. He was 3 of 7 from 3. That number I like to see. I think that's the perfect number for full minutes Pajemski in a normal game, including all our players. 3 for 7 from 3, 42.7%. Shoot above 40%. Shoot about 7 or 8 threes per game if they're good looks. Knock down three of them. And then what is Pajemski's calling card? You know, a team high plus six in the plus minus department. Pretty consistent to find Pajemski towards the top of plus minus for the Warriors. And especially as a lead player and that leading ball hand there, I like that even more because we know what he can do as a supporting role player. Good to see that that plus minus translates even in a different role for him as that leader. Looks they're starting to look a little bit of growth and evolution in terms of what shots he's able to get to. You know, he's as he becomes this more higher volume shooter and taking on more of a usage role, you know, can he get to what are like, you know, I call sweet spots? You know, what is really his go-to short of, you know, shooting threes and his little decel at the rim? Where does he get his most of his scoring from? We saw towards the end of last season and kind of that midway through the year, we started settling into a mid-range where he's actually very efficient from that elbow. And you started to see him, you know, not even just, you know, pulling up into some mid-range, but I think Dre had the ball in the post one time. Kuminga just kind of curls off of a screen and cuts baseline, little catch and shoot off balance mid-range, probably from like 10 to 12 feet, knocks it down. Can he essentially get to these spots in the mid-range and hit tough mid-range shots, hit some slightly off-balanced shots at a high enough percentage, take smart ones and be confident enough to, when you find yourself unable to get all the way to the hoop and not open from three, you know, can you find that little second layer of scoring? And it's looked pretty good. I mean, it's becoming enough of a sample size where I think if Pajemski's taking a mid-range shot, I think that's got a pretty good chance of going in better than like a Kuminga mid-range, better than most of our team mid-range outside of Steph. So I think if he can kind of develop that part to his game, and you know, that's maybe another two, three attempts per game, knock down maybe two, 1.5 to two of those. And now you're going to see your scoring rate rise from 12, 13 points to maybe like 15 to 16 points per game. And that's big growth for Pajemski. He made someone pay. I forget. I think it was Ayton who went under. He was a Dre set a screen at the top outside at the top of the three. Pajemski sees the defender, I think Ayton, go under the screen and just steps up into a three and knocks it down. That's something else that's very important, just especially in that screen and roll game. That's just going to force defenders to come up, play more aggressive, and then open up that much more space for everyone else to work. So I thought that was something he's done before, but if you can consistently do that and pull that shot and knock it down, huge weapon for him to have. My question is, what happens when you're not playing against the Lakers backup team in October? What happens when, say, there's no Steph Curry? What happens when Amen Thompson's guarding you? What happens when Jaden McDaniels is guarding you? What do you do when Anthony Edwards is guarding you? You know, can pods get the separation from these elite athletes with length, physical, and we know Pods isn't the most athletic specimen there is. He's crafty, but how does he find separation? It's not, it's if there's any one thing I'd point to that with Pods that just is going to keep him from really truly becoming this type of player that we hope he can become, it's just he's a little limited his ceiling with his athleticism and his physical makeup and his explosiveness to, you know, there's not much you can do when you have someone like Jaden McDaniels guarding you in that situation for Pods. How does he separate? Obviously, he's going to need a lot of on-ball screens. It's going to be off-ball movement. That's the evolution that I need to see out of him to truly believe that, hey, I'm okay if Pods is our lead guard going forward when Steph's off the floor and in a post-Steph era. Can you continue running this type of an offense where you're running a motion offense led by Pods? Can you still run those split cuts? How is he in that split cut game? Again, what offense do you really need to run here with that bench unit or again for the future? And questions that need to be answered because as well as Pods played last night, Warriors offense didn't really get out of the mud. Got beat obviously by the Lakers second team. So how good is this lineup really when it's led by Pods? I don't know if it's all on him, but there needs to be a better system in place than what we currently run because he's not Steph Curry and you don't have the other weapons around. And, he can be, Pods can be a little bit limited by his athleticism. All that being said, great game for Pods. And if he continues on this pace and just being this efficient and creating for others, I'm very happy with that growth. And then the question becomes, hey, he's extension eligible and how much money do you pay him? Are you committing to him? Are you committing to Kuminga? Are you committing to somebody else that you might trade for? A lot of questions to answer, but potentially for that extension, I mean, Pods is going to be wanting more than $20 million per year. He's probably going to be wanting more than $25 million per year. At what point is it too much for a player, again, that might be a bit limited as to being a potential lead guard, lead scorer in this league? Over to Kuminga, who. Yeah, it's kind of more of the same, guys. It's glimpses of greatness and glimpses of growth. And then there's also glimpses of the past and just his just growing pains as he's trying to figure out a style that works for him and the Warriors. By glimpses of greatness, a monster dunk where he's just switching hands in midair and dunking with his left in transition. And I don't think anyone would argue with you when they say Kuminga might be the best or one of the best transition players in the league. It was a lot to like in terms of growth and that he had six assists. And when he has the ball and catching it in the post or catching it on the wing, he's looking to pass and create for others. And I like the mentality. You can definitely tell it's a conscious effort to get the ball moving to create for others. Still pretty efficient field goal percentage in this one. He was 5 for 8, had 13 points in just 22 minutes. So scoring wise, not bad. Shot selection, not the worst. Zero rebounds, which I don't need to say anything more than that. Five turnovers. At what expense does this Kuminga newfound playmaking, where he has some nice assists, driving, kicking, getting to the hoop, passing, but you also see that it's new. The game hasn't quite slowed down in that aspect for him in terms of seeing the floor, especially off the dribble. What are the assist to turnover numbers really going to be? It's not even just assists, it's assist to turnovers. Can he be a 3-to-1 assist to turnover guy? Can he be, even just relatively close to that? Because that's going to make a big difference as to whether you can run your offense through Kuminga. It's much different. It's different than what you see with Pajemski. It's very much in that Jimmy Butler role, like I alluded to earlier, where they're trying to get Kuminga the ball in certain spots. And then let him work, right? Give it to him, clear out, have almost try to have four out and potentially a cutter cutting off of that while he works in isolation. We already know he can isolate, score, and get to the line from there, but does it become an efficient enough offense? Like you can do when you just dump it down to Jimmy Butler and you're getting a clean, good look with low turnovers from that, 3 out of 4 possessions anytime you dump it down to JK there. Again, it's a process, right? It's something sort of new for him. It's something that as it continues to evolve, as it continues to get better, that becomes a weapon and an efficient offensive style for the Warriors, particularly when Jimmy and even Steph are off the floor. Can that be a better offensive and more efficient offense than just having, the Pajemski alpha offense? Does it work together with Pajemski running that, where basically Pods and JK are Steph and Jimmy and that kind of style spacing? I don't know, but what I do know is the number that I like to look at the most, and not everyone agrees with how important the stat is, but in terms of plus minus. JK, a team low, minus 10 in his minutes. That kind of just tells a story right there, right? Pods, JK always find themselves kind of on opposite ends of that spectrum, man. Yeah, that needs to get better. And it's not all JK's fault. He had some nice passes that he could have easily been at 8 or 9 assists, but that wasn't the case. And he just needs to continue to evolve. And that's all I'll say about that. Questions after just looking at this team and the role players and the depth and where the Warriors might just get stuck offensively. The obvious question is, do you need to go get help to go get a microwave score as a sixth man? Basically another guard. Do you need to go get your Jordan Poole type? What would be Kobe White? What would be Malik Monk? That microwave score that can just get you these shots that I'm talking about. And if Pods plays like this, maybe not, but Pods needs to be consistently playing like this, and you still might need more than that. So that's my first question. Question two would be, hey, does De'Anthony Melton help with this? You know what he can do on the defensive side of the ball. Melton, a 10, 11 point scorer for the most part, and he can shoot well. Can he be a lead guard when you need it, or at least in combination with Pods and or Kuminga? Does he give you enough offense? And obviously having Moody back as well, and just every does the offense work? Can you make it work by adding Melton in here? And then the third question is, how do you get more offense out of Draymond Green when Steph Curry's not on the floor? Dre, we know what he is, and we know he can be an effective and productive player as a playmaker and even as a back-end scorer and back-end spacer of the floor, particularly when Steph Curry's on the court. Him and Steph have as good chemistry in the league as any two players. When Steph's out, can Draymond be an efficient score? Can he still play make? Can he handle the ball and take care of the ball? What can you get the usage out of Draymond and the effectiveness that you do when, at least when Steph's on the floor? Disappeared in this one last night. I get that it's just the preseason, but I think we've seen enough over time that it's hard to rely on Dre for anything other than, back end offense when Steph's off the floor. Last, I guess not a question, but just I thought TJD had a good game. I think, well, I forget what he was, but he's like 7 of 9 from the floor or something like that. So what he gives you is a play finisher. Outside of Kuminga, he's probably, I mean, not that he finishes well at the hoop, but at least he can dunk and get up and cut and catch something vertically and give you a vertical spacer. Has he improved his finishing around the rim, where he was maybe the worst player in the league last year at finishing on layups around the hoop? If that's a little bit better, now that gives you a weapon that you pretty sorely need, and it's something that you found at one point with TJD and Klay. You remember that little combination where those two played very well in a little two-man game together? You saw glimpses of Pajemski and TJD doing that a couple times last night. Had a nice little interchange give and go where TJD finished at the hoop. Can that become something? Because we already know Al Horford's not going to play every game. He's probably not going to play any back-to-backs. Quinton Post, I mean, he kind of is what he is at this point. You could probably play Dre more center minutes when Horford's out, but you're probably going to need to rely on TJD to play a few shifts if Horford's out, and maybe even when he's not in some matchups. Can he improve enough where he is a weapon as not only a lob threat, play finisher, but also a rim protector on the other side? That gives you something that is much needed and just a different look. So things to think about and things that, without Steph there, without Jimmy there to cover up a lot of these role player issues and back end issues, it was nice, not nice, but it was telling to see last night what the Warriors look like in those situations. So those are some questions I have. Those are some evaluations I have. Obviously, a lot of decisions, and Pajemski will be under the microscope very much all season long. And Jonathan Kuminga has been and will be under 5 microscopes at maximum power for the foreseeable ever. All right, that's my last preseason preview for you guys. I am going to be off to Vermont to visit the in-laws for a week, so I'm not going to be back until after the Warriors' first game opening night against the Lakers. So I'm excited to see you next, because it means it is on like a Donkey Kong. Good luck to the Warriors this year. I'm going to throw out my prediction of the Warriors win 52 games. I don't know if any trades have to happen, but I think they need to get off to a hot start, give themselves some cushion so they're not chasing a playoff spot or chasing a specific seed by the end of the season. Get off to a good start, give yourselves the rest when you need it. And, just like 2022, when I forget what they started, but you can get off to a hot start, you give yourself a lot more opportunity for success to make a long playoff run. So 52 wins, you heard it here first. They might blow by that. All right, I will see you guys in the regular season after hopefully the Warriors take care of business and against the Lakers when it matters. Until then, I am Chris Chin. Peace, love, and sack and dubs.